This is Open to Hope Radio, featuring Dr. Gloria Horsley and her daughter, Dr. Heidi Horsley, coming to you on behalf of the Open to Hope Foundation, dedicated to those who are looking for hope after loss. Now, here's Dr. Gloria.
Welcome to the Open to Hope Show. I'm your host, Dr. Gloria Horsley, with my co-host,
Dr. Heidi Horsley.
Well, good morning, Heidi, and good afternoon in New York, right?
Hi, Mom. Yep, it's 1:47 p.m. or around that time.
So we're December 8th. We're moving along into the holidays, and hopefully people are making their plans. I think it's really important, if you've had a loss, to make your plans and to decide what you're going to do. If you're not going to spend your Christmas Eve with your family, tell them now. They may be angry at you, but I'm going to tell you they'll be a lot angrier if you wait till the day before. So give people a heads up. Heidi's already given her father a heads up. And he wasn't happy about it, was he, Heidi?
No. I have given him the heads up. I usually spend Christmas with my family, and I am going to spend Christmas with my own, my immediate family. But, yes, I'm not going to be spending Christmas in California this year. So it is a hard thing to tell people. I like telling them via email first because I'm a little chicken.
So that's a good way to do it, I guess. But tell them early, really. And they'll get over it. I think he's almost over it, Heidi. So I wanted to start out a little bit with our book corner. And I wanted to remind you that we have a brand new book out, and you can get it on Amazon, and it's called Open to Hope, Inspirational Stories of Handling the Holidays. We've got some great stories for everybody in their loss of spouse, loss of child, loss of sibling, wonderful stories. And they're not just like downer stories. They're upper stories about, you know, how they're hopeful stories about we got through, you can too. And Joanne Haskins has a really excellent one in that book with just a lot of advice for people who had a loss. And hers is really about any type of loss. So pick it up and take a look at it and tell your friends about it if they have had a loss. And I do want to talk to our little guest a little bit about the holidays too, because Sally Garblick, is that how you say your name, Sally Garblick?
Garblick, yes.
Garblick, yeah. Garblick. Sally has some things in her wonderful book. She's got a great book, and it's called The Reason. And by the way, I love that name. And yeah, it's a wonderful name. We'll have to ask you in a minute how you came up with it. But her son, she lost her son to suicide in 2002. And A Road to Recovery began by reading over 100 books on grief, spirituality, and afterlife. And Sally's a real seeker by nature. And she began formulating a recovery plan by exploring other people's ideas presented in all these books. And she has kind of done what she calls cliff notes to grief and shares lessons, tools used, and insights gained in her book, The Reason. And I will say to you, there are just so many wonderful ideas in her, Sally. Congratulations on this book.
Thank you. I'm very proud of it.
It's a wonderful book, and you're a very good writer. Did you write before?
No, I didn't. It's always kind of been a hobby for me, but to have anything published, this is my first attempt at that.
Mm-hmm. It's you're a very clear writer, very interesting, and it's a great book. What I like is it's interspersed with her story, but then it also has a lot of good tips in it, along the way. And it's some books you get a little disrupted by those, but with yours it just kind of flows right in. You got kind of the inspiration for writing it in Sedona, right?
Well, I did. All along the way, I kept collecting a lot of information. I don't think you can read that many books without trying to capture some of the best points. And I had a little box in my study, and every time I read a book or had a conversation with someone where I felt like they gave me great advice, I would write it down and toss it in this box. And soon my box was overflowing. It was right about the time I went to Sedona, and I was contemplating, you know, what I was going to do with that pile of notes that it was given to me, that I would be sharing that in a book with people, which was very shocking at the time. But the more I thought about it, the more sense it made, and I didn't want to waste it. I thought to myself, what a waste of time if I've gone through all of this information and taken the time to chart down all these notes if I'm the only person to benefit from what I've learned. So that did inspire me to keep going.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the books, some of the things in here. One that you get into is about how you kind of connected with Ryan and how Ryan informs your life. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, I do. Ryan made contact with me pretty early into my grieving experience, and I want everyone to understand that this is not unusual, and probably if they're listening, they're nodding their heads knowing that it's not, because most of the parents that I talk to and, you know, spouses, they've all experienced some type of spirit contact. It started with electricity with me, and I was very skeptical, as was the rest of my family. We found ourselves second-guessing. We would think, gee, could that be Ryan? And then we would, you know, poo-poo the idea, because I think it's very normal for people to disbelieve, if you will. But sooner or later, we just learned to embrace those little gifts that he gave to us and use them to move us forward and uplift us, because they were very uplifting. Every time Ryan gave me something, it was, I call myself a miracle junkie, because I think I could live on the hope that it gave me forever. It just uplifted me, and it made me feel so good. It just made me want more and more. So I became a very aware person because of his contact with me. And, of course, when you're more aware, you're more sensitive to others and your environment. And I think that's a good way for us to learn and grow, too. So he did me a big favor by opening my eyes and letting me know that his loving spirit was still there, and it encouraged me to move forward.
Mm-hmm. Tell Heidi, I was telling Heidi in your book, there's this wonderful thing about the frogs. Tell her about the frogs.
Yes, the frogs. They were pretty. I kept the little mailbox.
I love your mailbox, Heidi. You've got to hear her mailbox thing.
Absolutely.
You had a mailbox.
It's pretty strange, wasn't it? You know,
tell them about the mailbox.
I put that mailbox over my son's headstone because, you know, he's young and he had a lot of young visitors, and they would leave little mementos and things. And, you know, I wanted to preserve those and let them know that that was important to us. So I put a mailbox there so I could kind of put them in the mailbox and shield them from the weather. And I went up there, and from time to time I would kind of clean the mailbox out because it would just get so overflowing. And I peeked in there, and there was this big old toad in the mailbox just kind of looking at me. And all I could think of was, how did it get in there? Because the lid was metal, and it was fairly heavy, and it sat off the ground a good 2 or 3 feet, so I just couldn't fathom how that crazy frog got in there. But it thrilled me at the same time because, you know, Ryan's always looking for creative little ways to get my attention, and so I just took that as one, and I took the frog out of the mailbox, and I kind of held it, and it just stared at me, and it just, I don't know, I felt compelled to give it a little kiss, and so I did. And as I held it in my hand, I thought, well, you know, this is kind of a great thing, you know, because I can touch it and feel it. And, you know, and that's what I wanted to do, was to touch and feel my son. So I just, I took solace in that fact that I could do that and wrap my mind around that moment and let it lift me up, which it did. And I thought, well, you know, it was an isolated circumstance, but I enjoyed it so much that he kept doing it. Pretty soon after that, you know, it would just became my thing to kind of like peek in that lid. And all throughout the summer, different shapes and sizes of these frogs would appear in this mailbox. They were never the same frog because he made sure they were
so
very
strange.
Different. But the message to me was transformation. He was trying to get me to understand you need to transform your life, your feelings, your how you process your thoughts, in order to get yourself out of this ditch, Mom, and move on, because that's what he did. You know, he had to transform, and so he was kind of pulling us along the pathway. So he used the frogs to do that. And the funny thing is that I have a very good friend of mine who, you know, and friends are so important during the grief process. And my friend Lori was wonderful to me. And she, all these little signs that I got, she never called me crazy. She completely bought into it head first with it. And when the frogs started appearing, she got on the internet and started researching the frogs and found this play. And it was completely about transformation from a wonderful writer named Penn Kemp in Canada. So he never leaves me hanging. He always leads me to a path to find the message or the lesson. And I mention in the book that there, you know, there's a reason for everything, and I guess that's
and that's why you called it The Reason, right?
That's why I called it The Reason.
Wonderful.
Because I kept saying, why is this happening? Why is this happening? You know, first of all, why did I lose my son? And then why is, you know, all these little miracles, like the heart-shaped rocks?
Oh, yeah, you found a lot of, and picture in the book of the heart-shaped rocks. Now, one thing I wanted to say to you, I know there are people out there, and they're sitting right there right now and saying, yes, I have those experiences, but they're skeptics. And, you know, my husband is skeptic or my family's skeptic. I can't talk to them about it. And I like, you know, you've talked about that in the book. You just have to accept it and not worry about them, right?
Exactly. If it works for you and you feel in your, I mean, it's highly intuitive. So if you feel that in your heart and you know that it's true, just embrace it. Don't worry about explaining it to other people. Don't worry about having to substantiate it with anything outside of your heartfelt knowingness that it is them. And I just, you know, you can drive yourself crazy trying to prove it to other people, but it's not meant for them. It's meant for you.
I love that. It's meant for you.
I like that a lot.
We get a little grief about the dimes, don't we, Heidi?
Yes, about how we find dimes in very strange and unusual places, and we find them often. It is amazing.
And we often
find them when we are going to do something in our lives to help others heal, and as a tribute to the life that my brother lived. You know, I'll be going to a conference or, you know, doing something around grief and loss, and I'll find them in the weirdest places. I mean, my mom and I can tell you, you know, cabs. I mean, just bizarre places, right, Mom?
Yep, absolutely. And you know, there are people who are skeptical when you tell them. But if it's your sign, it's your sign. Well, I wanted to get to your cliff note area in your book because Ryan did die by suicide. He shot himself. I know it's so tough, and I liked your kind of cliff notes that you had, particularly that you've got a couple that are suicide specific, and I wanted to bring those out. And one of them is tell the truth. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, I think that often with suicide, there's a lot of pain and shame associated with it, and so therefore people make a lot of they make a lot of excuses, but they don't usually tell the truth, and it's just cleaner and easier to state what is. My neighbor asked me on the day of my son's death what I was going to tell people, and I said, if I don't tell the truth, no one will be able to approach me for help or understanding or guidance, and so it never occurred to me to do otherwise. And so I encourage people to be honest about suicide because your recovery really depends on being able to lean on the victims of suicide and the survivors. That is a very strong and helpful and hopeful community. So you never want to shut the door to that. You want to be honest with yourself and honest with other people so that you have that tool for healing.
I like that. And we had a guest on, Dave Roberts, last week who said, if you're a group where you don't want to say, you know, that or whatever, we were talking about drug addiction specifically related deaths, he just says, if you don't want to say it, just say suddenly.
Yeah, that's what they use in the obituaries. And it's funny because when you, and I do read the obituaries, I don't know why, but I do. But when I comb through them and it'll say so-and-so died suddenly, that's pretty much a trigger for me that recognizes that it was probably suicide. Especially
like you said, Sally, part of your healing journey and part of so many of ours is to reach out to people that have been where we've been and to accept support and also to give back and give support as you're further along in your journey. And if you're too secretive, you miss out on a lot of those connections.
You really do. And people appreciate honesty. I know that in my experience, in my community, just a small little community that I live in, people knew that I was very open and very receptive and very, and I tried to be as helpful as possible. They felt that I was approachable. And because of that, you know, it just created this big, huge wall of love around me. And I can't think of anything more healing than that. So it's just another door that you can keep open for yourself because, you know, when it's suicide, you feel a lot of them shut.
And then there's a second thing you have for your notes, and you say this is also suicide specific. Control the ripple effect. Talk about that.
Well, the ripple effect with suicide, I noticed at the funeral home, everybody who approached me felt like they had, they felt guilt, thinking there was something they could have done or said that might have changed the status quo. And the problem with that is if you're, it's your family that you're trying to work through this suicide, if you start taking in all of these alternatives, you can get so wrapped up in that you will lose focus of your recovery. So the important thing to remember when people approach you with the could have, should have, and would have, you just want to thank them for their time, hug them for their support, but remember to keep your eyes and your mind focused on your immediate family and don't get caught up in their need for absolution because your priority is your nucleus. And, you know, you if you get caught up in everyone's guilt, you'll never find your way to healing.
I like that.
And I just want to say, Sally, and also you'll be living in the past and kind of stuck in the past if you do that.
Yes. And a lot of people do get stuck there. I have went to suicide support groups, and I can tell you that one of the groups was very, very stuck, and it was a lot of it was because they were trying to figure out who to blame. And sooner or later, we have to understand, as, you know, suicide survivors, that ultimately the choice was our child's or our father's or whomever it was that made the decision to end their life. And that's free will. There's nothing anyone can do about free will, not even God.
Mm-hmm.
So
you really need to,
once you can embrace that, you can help yourself move forward. And it's all about taking those steps forward, and sometimes they're really small baby steps, but certain, when you can come to certain resolutions in your mind, you can take huge leaps forward. That's one of them.
Absolutely. And you have some general grief points for everybody. I'm going to read a couple, and then I want to stop on one. Take time off to grieve. It's okay to grieve at your own pace. And you comment on all these things very nicely. People say stupid things, which they sure do. Brace yourself. Grief triggers are everywhere. And I would like you to comment on your 10th, which is have a plan for the holidays and special occasions.
Yes, having a plan for the holidays is probably the most important piece of advice that was dropped into my lap. There was a grief seminar about 3 or 4 months after my son passed, and they had a wonderful speaker. And he had a lot of important points, and I was so glad I had attended that. And I wrote down everything he said, and I practiced it. Because in the beginning of grief, I just think we're rendered, well, for lack of a better term, stupid. We can't think, we can't even hardly function most of the time. So it helps to have a written plan of action. Now, the holidays are so emotionally packed anyway, excuse me, that these are a really important time to stick to the plan. He mentioned in his, and I really advise it, like the first year of grieving, if there's any family you can visit out of town or you can take a trip, that would be the best case scenario, just because we don't expect our loved ones in those new places like we expect them home around the table or at the tree. That's what we did. It was very, very helpful. We took a trip that first Christmas holiday, but we planned our days from beginning to end. Where we would go, who we would see, would we take in a movie?
But didn't you have a wonderful sister-in-law that did that?
I did indeed. And she set out an itinerary, and she really set the pace for me. And it was when we got home, we realized that that schedule had kept us focused on the task at hand. And even though you're sad and you're thinking about your loved one, when your body is in motion, it really helps take the heat off. So that plan is super important, and it's not just Christmas and Thanksgiving, even those times are coming ahead. You'll want to include the birthday of your loved one or any special anniversaries. These are all times when you want to, at least if you don't do anything else, say to yourself, this is where I'm going to have dinner and this is who I'm going to have dinner with. At least that's a plan.
Now, I want to get on to the build your toolbox because you talk about that. And I'm just going to read a few of things and then I want to stop on one of those again, which you say cry, remember them. If you're tired, sleep, do what you can, when you can, proper diet and exercise, minimize alcohol abuse, talk to friends. I love friends. But the one Heidi and I wanted to stop on was the memory box, because coming up with Christmas, I think it would be such a great time to build a memory box.
I love my memory box. I used it a lot in the beginning, and I still go to it. But what's great about it is it gives you one place where you can take care of your need to touch. I think that the loss of physical touch is the most cruel part of grief. And sometimes, especially during the holidays, you just want to be with them and touch them. So what I did was, my son was a huge collector. He had baseball collections. He had, oh my goodness, coin collections, lighter collections. My goodness, I could get lost in his stuff. So what I did was I took all the favorite pieces of those things and put them in one consolidated box so that when I had the craving to touch my son, I would touch his things. I could go to one place, take the lid off, put on his jacket, you know, remember some of the nice memories, and then I would, you know, extract myself from it and move to the next thing. But it's a nice consolidated area where you can go and spend time with them and not get lost all day in their room, which is easy to do. So I even put the box in a location that was not in his room for a long time just so that I could, you know, stay focused.
Absolutely. Now, will you do anything special to remember him this holiday season at Christmas or whatever?
Yes. Well, I always do the candle lighting. I always do the candle lighting ceremony that the Compassionate Friends has every year. I just love that, and my whole family is involved in it, and we light that candle. And then on Christmas Day and on Thanksgiving Day, we always light a candle for Ryan, and we say a little prayer for him. We mention his name, and we always tell a cute little story. Somebody always has something that they remembered out of the archives of their minds, and it's fresh every year. Sometimes it's my father, sometimes it's my daughter, or more my husband, but we always try to share a special memory, and that keeps him alive. And last Christmas, actually, Ryan was the one that kind of did his own thing. I had bought Ralph Lauren sweaters for us, because that was his favorite designer. And on Christmas Day, my daughter and I opened them together, and we held them up so my husband could take a picture. And Ryan was the little orb right by the Ralph Lauren pony. We told that story all day.
That's wonderful.
That was a great story. And so sometimes he makes his presence known, and that's the best part of our day.
Oh, fabulous. Mm-hmm. Well, Heidi, I wanted to kind of wrap the show up by having you talk about Sally's website and then having her talk a little bit about it, too. But I know you've really liked it.
Yes, it's really healing. And she's got suggested reading and grief help sites and all sorts of stuff that you can go on and look at. So I would suggest that people go there. It's www.thereason/book.com. Right, Sally?
Yes. I tried to put all the books, because I read so many that were helpful. There's a tab on there, too, where people can go to suggested reading, and the link will take them directly into Amazon for purchase, and the links to the reason for purchase are there, too. People who, you know, are listening to the show today and just want to know more about it, they can download the first chapter for free and read it there. And also they can view the pictures in color that are in the book. So that'll give them a little taste of what our story is about. And again, it is www.thereason-book.com. And there's also links to my Facebook pages there as well. But Amazon and barnesandnoble.com is where you can purchase the book. And I also have e-books available. So if you have an e-reader for Kindle or the Nook, you can download my book off those websites for purchase as well.
And what a great Christmas gift you can give to yourself or to other people you know that are involved with grief and loss. Or just, it's just a good read also, and just has a huge amount of good advice. Well, Sally, thanks so much for being on the show today, and blessings to you and your family during this holiday season.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity to share our story.
Thanks, Sally, and thank you so much for helping people heal after loss.
Well, you've been listening to the Open to Hope show today, and I want to remind you that December 11th coming up is a worldwide candle lighting for the Compassionate Friends. We hope that you will all join in the candle lighting at 7 o'clock in your area. You can go on the CompassionateFriends.org website and find out where their actual meeting's going on in your area. It's a wonderful event, and isn't it, Heidi? And it's a fantastic thing to do.
Yeah, it's really powerful.
So stay tuned again next week for more of the Open to Hope Show.
You've been listening to Open to Hope Radio, hosted by Drs. Gloria and Heidi Horsley. Like today's edition, all of our past programs are available on demand at opentohope.com, along with helpful articles, videos, resources, and links to help get you through the toughest time of your life. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter and sign up for our monthly newsletter. Again, that's opentohope.com. Check it out today. Then be sure to stop by next Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time when we'll be posting another edition of Open to Hope Radio. Remember, others have been where you are. They made it through, and you can too, as long as you're open to hope.